So thank you very much. Thank you all for being here. We're almost at closing time of Fosdem, but I'm glad you're still paying attention and not yet too worn out. Yes. Microphone's not working well enough. Higher, maybe. 1, 2, 3. Better? Okay, cool. All right. Yes, so from reverse Google, from email to decentralization. Titles have to be a bit interesting. I tried to make this one interesting, but I could have, of course, taken others as well. However, I think Google perfectly exemplifies what I am thinking about here. Just like this. This was about, when was it launched? 2003, 2004, right? Gmail. So in Fosdem terms, Fosdem plus three, plus four, kind of like-ish. And basically, from today's perspective, I would say that when you look at what happened back then, Gmail was a loss leader to capture the identity market. They basically gave Gmail away for free so everybody would get the address, right? And it's enormous today. We all know that. And basically, what they did then, with the federation of identity, so login with Google, right, is that they got visibility on every single interaction that people are doing, right? Whenever somebody uses the login with Google thing, then they know who is signing on where, for what, you know. I mean, they have the full visibility on the interaction, and then they monetize that. Basically, right? Because that allows them to create better data profiles. So Gmail has been the loss leader to create this kind of mechanism. But it goes deeper. I actually believe by now, it took me a while to come to this, and if you see my FOSS Asia talk last year, actually, you'll see that I have a little bit more story to this, but I'm not going to tell all of that today. I believe that the federation protocols for identity are part of the problem, they're not part of the solution. Because in the way that the web is set up, basically what happens here is that you have enormous economies of scale. You have the cost benefit of running a larger platform, more centralized system, and you have their ability to leverage identity into multiple markets that makes the life for every single free software project much harder, right? It's harder for us to build applications because they have the identity platform to leverage into other domains. And that is actually part of the problem. It is, to some extent, due to the fact how the web, how TLS, how certificate authorities, how all of these things work together to create a circle actually works against us. It's like we are working against gravity, right? There's an underlying principle that really makes our life much, much harder. That was at least my problem analysis, and this is basically why we started Varain. Varain is short for sovereign, right? So the idea was to create applications on top of self-sovereign identity that would help to change that dynamic in favor of free software, in favor of open source. That was the idea behind this, right? Because, I mean, the only answer otherwise we had was like, yeah, let's all self-host this. But to me, that always sounded a lot like Marie Antoinette, right? This whole thing, like, let them eat cake. But come on, guys. Like, seriously, we need to have better answers than that because most people do not want to self-host everything. I prefer not to self-host everything. I mean, I have good connectivity. I can self-host. And I really don't want to self-host everything. I really don't. So at the end of the day, we need better answers. And I believe a very important part of that answer is actually this idea of self-sovereign identity. Now, I do not want to do a full introduction of how this works, but I do want to talk about a few things conceptually, how all of this comes together. Because what we see today is that the idea of self-sovereign identity is increasingly co-opted by the web-based federation technology community. They actually now implement a lot of things on top of OpenID Connect and things like this, right? And basically reintroduce similar patterns again when we actually want something else. We want actual decentralization. So let me show you what I think and what a decentralized key management system should look like. And this is one of them, right? So this is, in fact, the one that I say is the most advanced and most well thought out and best implemented approach, which is based on something called CARI, the Key Event Receipt Infrastructure. And we start over on the left. We have an autonomous identifier, right? So similar to a content identifier, we have an autonomous identifier that identifies my key, right? It's derived from the inception key that I'd create for my identity. My key represents this identity. I can have one, I can have many. I always generate them locally. They always remain on the device. Every device that ever interacts has its own identifier. The identifiers, of course, evolve. They do things, right? So they even have like the possibility for key rotation. Say, I want to keep my identity, but I think my key might have been compromised. I want to rotate the key. So I have a pre-rotation key that allows me to do that. There's a couple of concepts here that are really, really powerful. I encourage everyone who's interested at all in this kind of technology to have a look at that because it's really quite interesting. What I can also do here is I can sign interactions. And I add all of this basically to a hashed list, right? It's a bit like a micro ledger, just like hash linked transaction information. I share this information with a pool of so-called witnesses, which is nothing but a very simple agent running anywhere that receives those receipts, that receives those updates and pushes back receipts to your devices that have the AID and manage it, the controllers. They mate to the key and provide a unified view in these things that I've created those certificates, that I have provided a new certificate for this topic, that I have signed a verifiable credential, all these kind of things. And I have my curl, the key event receipt block, that is the aggregation of all of this. And I can get that, of course, directly from my key management system, but I can also then get it from my witnesses, right? So I can ask a witness, here's an AID, an identifier that connected to me. Do you know anything about them? What is their history, right? So I can link them back to actually their root of truth, which to those of you who have looked at ledger systems and blockchains and also all these kind of things, it's basically taking some of those concepts from there and making them locally consistent with an eventually consistent approach in terms of synchronization across the interactions. And it's actually really, really powerful because it scales, right? And unless blockchains, which we all know have an enormous scalability problem, this thing scales because it's a decentralized set of microledgers, if you will. That is an actual full decentralized system that allows you to then verify the state of every single device, and because it's lightweight enough, you can actually deploy this even in an IoT setting. You can deploy it anywhere. That is the kind of system that I believe we would want, because if we had something like this that works, we could then, on top of this, use verifiable credentials, so machine-readable documents that are signed and linked to these AIDs in order to attest to certain interactions or certain statements about our identities that we can verify as much or as little, all the way to full anonymity, as the context requires, right? There's different contexts in the world. If I need to buy a beer, it's different than if I want to open a bank account, or if I just want to exchange an anonymous message. Those things are completely different use cases. This system allows us to say, I need this much or this little verification here. That is the kind of system that I think we want to move toward. Now, wanting to move towards a system and knowing that it is more secure than what we're doing and more scalable is one thing. The other thing is, how do you actually get this into the real world? And that is always kind of the hardest problem. I mean, all of us here are technologists, right? So all of us know how to build technology. But getting technology into the hands of actual people is actually very often at scale is the harder problem. How do you get the actual adoption? We have been doing a lot of work with Gaia-X and other European projects in this field, and through them managed to find Health Infonet in Switzerland. Health Infonet is a very specific partner of ours with a very specific property, because they are a company, but they are owned by the Swiss Doctors Association. So they do not have a profit motive, right? If they make a profit, they just give it back to the Doctors Association. There's no other player that wins. They have a service mission. They're driven by service. As long as they do not go bankrupt, they're okay. But they want to provide a proper service. They're very old, like 30 years-ish old. And they started out in the 90s with email. Basically, back in the day, email was new, right? They realized we cannot just send patient data unencrypted back and forth. So what do we do? So they, at that time, had the answer, S-MIME. So basically, now they're doing S-MIME-based domain encryption, which, you know, is not fantastic, but I guess it's better than plain text. They are operating in every single GP's office and across all the hospitals and laboratories in Switzerland. And they realized a few years ago that if they continued to do what they do without actually adapting, they would go bankrupt. They would not exist. They would no longer be relevant at some point because the world has moved on. So they decided to invest into their own reinvention on a platform basis, so moving towards modern cloud and OpenShift and all these kind of things, on a process level, so DevOps, Agile, all the modern things that you would want to do, and also on a solution level, like what is it that we should do 15 years from now, was the question that they asked. And for them, they realized basically in order to remain relevant, we need to look at how the healthcare sector is transforming. Come in, we have more seats there. Don't worry, sit down. They realize that they do need, in order to remain relevant, they do need to change the way they're doing this. And my version of this would be that they are increasingly becoming the data space terminal to the healthcare data space of Switzerland. On that journey, we got together through some POCs. They're looking at things like Cyan, which is an ETH-based network technology for better secure networking, and SSI as something that they would want to be able to do. We've been helping them in that transition. And in fact, we already have one product in production, which is Seal. That would be yet another talk. Seal is a edge application based on IPFS, by the way, so content addressing, delivering all the messages of Swiss doctors to patients securely to the edge in the form of basically a cryptographic fragment swarm that comes together only at the edge and only gets decrypted there. This system is in production today with around 800,000 messages every month. All the Swiss doctors are using it. But I'm not here for that. I'm here for the S-MIME gateways, because this is the next stage of the transition. The S-MIME gateways, very old technology, right? That is the next thing that really squeaks very hard in terms of, you know, what they are doing today. So we, with them, have come up with something to replace S-MIME gateways this year, all of them, until the end of this year, which is a really interesting timeline, by the way. It's quite challenging, but, you know, we'll manage. We'll actually make it happen. But instead of just building a mail gateway, because, I mean, the hospital still needs to be able to send mail, right? You cannot tell them mail is no longer there, right? It doesn't exist anymore. That would never work. So instead of just taking away the S-MIME gateways, what we did is we came up with the idea of, let's wrap this concept of decentralized key management, organizational credential management, all of these things into a new kind of mesh node that bases its key management on autonomous identifiers, fully based on the principles from before, right, on that new generation, and then allow that to also generate X509 certificates that we wrap into a SMTP and S/MIME flow. So we are legacy compatible, right? We can still exchange messages with normal S/MIME gateways, but new gateways suddenly get the ability to verify those organizational identities based on the new technology, on verifiable credential, organizational identity, multi-rooted trust systems, all of the things that you would actually want. We have a scalable, truly peer-to-peer mesh network that allows you to exchange data. We call this the sovereign data exchange that we're building around this. So it's a store and forward engine with smart routing. And smart, in this case, means programmable. So Rego-based policies stored in Git, so you can actually version them, you can control them, you can alter them the way that you need to. And suddenly this thing becomes able to, A, of course, send mail, right? Wonderful, better, more secure. There's a WireGuard tunnel between all these mesh nodes, so no more metadata leakage at least. So that is good. It's better than S/MIME was before. But what we've done by the end of this is we have rolled out a new, more capable infrastructure. Because we're not stopping at email, right? That email is necessary, but it's not the goal. It's not the end game of this. So what we have here now is a system that is able to handle structured data in an intelligent way. Because based on autonomous identifiers and then using things like the overlay capture architecture, which is it's basically content address schema system, if you will, that allows you to determine the schema of data in a way that is unique and clear, and both sides know they're using the same schema to interpret that kind of data, right? And you can link it all together, and you can sign it all. So you now have, you exchange data that is signed, authentic, schema is clear, you know even 5 years later which schema has been used. You no longer have the unclarity on the schema level either, which is, if you ever have looked at that sector, is a big problem, because even two doctors will note things differently in their systems, right? Same case, two different doctors, they write it down different. And so you need to understand the semantics underneath, and the only way to do this is with some kind of layer for allowing you to express the semantics of the specific data at the time it is being created. So this, we call it Stargate, actually, this whole system. I mean, somebody came up with the idea and it stuck, as stupid names often do. And basically now this whole thing is the ability of creating a mesh network of nodes that is able to handle mail, but also structured data based on this new kind of autonomous approach to identity and data. Just quickly, I don't want to go into the whole architecture of the whole thing, but just so you know, I mean, we're not reinventing everything, right? We're not idiots. We take whatever is proven in the free software world and combine it in a new way to generate this result. So if you look at the architecture here, you will see something like the Open Policy Agent, right, which is for Rego. You will see, you know, API gateways, because you need to somehow connect this to legacy systems. You have a key cloak in order to connect your SSI, decentralized key management, to OpenID locally in a local environment, right? Because you need to somehow bring these things to work them together. I mean, you cannot replace everything around you. It's impossible. You have a postfix, of course, for the mail routing, because, well, you know, it is kind of the application to do that. So it's not really like we're reinventing everything. We're just specifically building the components that are needed to make the new functionality possible. And that is exactly what we're building. And one of the beautiful things of our partnership with HIN is that they have committed to having us release everything, 100% as free software. All of it, without exception. Everything will be free software under the AGPL. So we have a complete stack that in a couple of years, I mean, this is now work that is ongoing, right? It's not going to be over this year. It's not going to be over in a month. It's too much work. But that we'll be able to provide this capability to health systems anywhere fully as free software. We have an actual answer that is data-friendly, privacy-friendly, allows us to give patients control over their data, because suddenly things like consent management and so on become much, much easier. You can actually handle them and you can prove them, because your event logs are basically your audit trail for the interactions as well. So you can map this entire space in this in a secure, robust, scalable, decentralized way. So yeah, and languages, just in case you care, most of everything we do backend is always Golang. Some Rust is in there for like the crypto primitives and stuff like this. Our front ends are usually React Native. So technologies that pretty much most people know these days. Why do I think, yes, I'm almost done, almost there. Why do I think this is relevant specifically also here in the decentralized communications room? You see, one of the beauties is that this node, because it is the stack, as if you want to call it that, is actually capable of handling any type of data, any type of interaction. And once you have the ability to handle organizational, institutional, like server-side identity in this way, right, and sign verifiable credentials to mark data or local users or interaction requests, you can connect systems without a central source of truth. You can trust in the local source of truth, right? The local service provides you with all the signed evidence chain that you require. And on the other side, you can verify this. You can say, this is really this system or this doctor in this department, in this hospital. And on the other side, you can verify that without needing to agree to a single point of failure or control that tells you in both directions, yes or no. You can now make this local, decentralized, which I think actually offers us for the first time something that solves the usability problem of key management. That's why I started all of this, right? That's why I realized we needed something like this, because this is something I've been doing since the 90s. I mean, I was part of every single key management thing that existed. Then finally, we have an actual answer to this. So it solves this cross-domain trust issue, right? The cross-server trust issue in an elegant, robust, and scalable way. And so I would be very happy if people were building on it. I mean, we are, with our partner together, having a health innovation center now. So anyone working on healthcare IT, right, anything in this domain, interested in this, wanting to work together, please get in touch. We are not only open, but we would like you to reach out to us. We actually want to work on this together, right? This is such a big thing. It doesn't just take a few guys to do it. It takes a community in the end of the day. And of course, since everything is going to be free software, I would be very happy if others took this and applied it to other domains as well, right? If this might be something that could solve a problem for you, right? Reach out as well. I mean, all of this is really like recent development, as in the alpha test phase will begin in March, in a month from now. It's that much that at the forefront, right? It's really at the edge. But by the end of this year, this thing is in production across Switzerland. And I'm absolutely certain that that will happen. So that is what I wanted to share. Thank you very much. This is my V card, so reach out if you want. You have my contact details. And if there's questions, maybe we still have space for a moment.
Yeah, we've probably got time for there's a question there. And another one there. Yeah, thank you for your talk. Very interesting. A lot of self-sovereign identity systems always come down to how do you manage your private keys. But you mentioned that those are on the device. The devices get lost, stolen, break down, etc.
Yes.
How can you recover your identity if the device with your private keys is lost?
So the way that Carrie allows us to handle that case is whenever you generate a new autonomous identifier, you have one key in private storage on the device, right? Ideally in a hardware container of some kind, some HSM, however that may look like. And you have a second key that is your pre-commitment on the recovery key, right? But that key never gets used until you need it. So you store that key in a different system. You can either do a social recovery, right? You can break it up and give it off to five people you trust or whatever, right? Or you could give it to an escrow. Depends on your use case, and this is a usability decision at the end of the day, right? So you need to figure out what is my user base willing to accept, but I can handle that key any way I want. And when that device gets lost, I can use that key to initialize a new device where I again do the same thing, right? I have another private key in HSM, but I use this key to sign that interaction to say, yes, this is the new authoritative key for that identifier.
If the user is my grandma who doesn't know anything about keys, how are you going to explain to her that there's a key that needs to be managed?
Oh, I would not tell her anything about keys, right? This would be an application design thing, right? Like she would have her whatever you want to call it, her app, right?
Yeah.
And she would, when the app initializes, right, it says, oh, either it's an initialization process that someone is participating in, as in you do it for her and you manage that, or she gets it from a provider of some kind, like either her doctor or some other institution, right? Like somebody that is in a trusted relationship to her. And yes, there is suboptimal scenarios, obviously, right? But in the end of the day, I think a social recovery for these kind of scenarios, for most of us at least, would work rather well.